Good evening, and welcome to a new season of UBC Arts on Air, a program of profiles, features, and discussions with UBC faculty, students, and others in the Faculty of Arts. And I'm your host, Ira Nadil. This evening, Nancy Hermiston, head of the UBC Voice and Opera Program at the School of Music. Nancy, greetings.
Thank you for having me here.
It's a great pleasure. And I want to start by asking you about your own interest in opera. Did it begin as a child? Were you an early cast member in a high school production?
No, I actually began, like many children, singing in children's choir. I came from a very small town of, like, at that time it was about 400 people in Ontario, in rural Ontario. And so our local music teacher was very great in giving us music training and discipline and everything. And I always loved to sing. I sang with my family dance band. So I grew up with Dixieland. And I used to sing from the age of 3 with the band and would be traveling around with them when they were playing for dances. And when I went to public school, then I was singing in the choirs and the festivals and things. And I went to high school and they started to do Gilbert and Sullivan, so I did that. And I went to U of T to study music education, but I knew I wanted to be a performer. And when I was deciding what I wanted to study, I couldn't decide between history or I thought I really want to be in musical theater. But opera, I thought I hated. I didn't know it. I didn't understand it. I wasn't familiar. It wasn't a big art form in my little town. But I had an uncle who was a great classical music fan. And he heard me sing this Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, and he said, you need to be a classical singer. You need to get voice lessons. He had taught a lady in his English class, and she was a famous Canadian singer, so he hooked me up with her. And my last year of high school, I took singing lessons. And when I went to U of T, I went actually as a singing major, but I wanted to continue studying with her, and I played flute in the high school band, and I wanted to stay with this singing teacher, but she wasn't at U of T, so they wouldn't let me study with her. So I tried to see if I could become a flute major, but I was so wonderfully, blissfully ignorant that I had no idea what that would mean in a school, in the Faculty of Music at Toronto. And anyway, when my singing teacher, she knew Robert Aitken, who was one of the great flute players of the world, and he happened to teach at U of T, and I went and played for him, and he said, well, you have no tone, you have no semblance of technique, but you have wonderful breath control, so I'll take you, but you'll have to work really hard, which I did. And then it just happened, I had a class with a man named Dr. Vinci, and he heard me sing, and he said, well, you should really be a classical singer. He was the head of Banff at the time. So he said, I want to send you to Banff, to the opera program. And I said, oh, couldn't I do musical theater? And he said, no, opera. And, of course, I was from a family of limited means, and I thought, Banff, you know, Western Canada, yeah. So I went to Banff, and I think it took all of about a day until I just fell in love with opera, and this whole new world opened up. After 6 weeks, after a few days, I knew that's what I wanted to do. But after 6 weeks, I knew that that's what I want to do for the rest of my life.
So, but what were some of the challenges in becoming an opera singer, even as a student?
Well, I went through the music education program at U of T, so I finished my undergrad degree. But I was singing all the time and competing and trying to get to be where I could go into the opera school, which was the opera school in Canada at the time. And just to be able to try and get to do that was a big challenge. And so then when I got into the opera school, it was a very competitive school and very good singers. So you have to just work really, really hard and just really try to perfect your technique, the acting, to be disciplined, to be on the ball, to learn your music. And at the time, I was living outside of Toronto, so I had like a 3-hour commute both ways by the time I got there and back. And I would learn all my music on that bus and on the GO train. And after the first week of school, I had all these assignments from the opera department. They thought they'd keep me busy the whole year, but I had 3 hours. I'm like President Toop on his airplane reading. I had 3 hours to learn my music on the bus and on the train. So I went back and I said, I've learned all this. What can I learn now? And so then they gave me Susanna and the Marriage of Figaro. That kept me busy for quite a while.
Yes, I would imagine it might. Tell me a bit about languages. I mean, because you need Italian, you need German.
Yes. That's one of the major challenges because, and it was very necessary then, but I think it's even more necessary now because everything now is done in the original language. Then occasionally you would do performances in English. And, you know, we didn't have surtitles then, but so they would do the performances in the language of the people. And so your languages still had to be good because you did sing in the foreign languages. But now my students, for instance, I have always tried to bring them through a cycle of operas with French, Italian, German. Then I always try to have a cycle of Czech and a cycle of Russian. So that during their 4 years or six, if they decide to do the master's, they've had experience in all of these languages. Then we go to Europe in the summer to the Czech Republic, and we do lots of times Czech operas, but we may do a German or another Italian, so it gives them more experience. And now with surtitles, everything is done in the original language. And it's expected that you do sing that language properly, and that is a lot of work. And it's not only the pronunciation, but it's the meaning. So you have to translate everything that you sing, everything that everybody else sings, in order to be the actor that's required of an opera singer.
So are you finding students are coming with wonderful voices, reasonable experience, but they don't quite have the language background?
Oh, usually. Because we live in a sea of English, you know, with some French, so we're a little bit better off with a bit of the French element in our population, and that some students take it at school. I took 5 years of it. So at least they have a knowledge of it. But it's not like Europe where in a half an hour you'd be somewhere where you would hear Italian speaking and German speaking. And we have distances and the languages are not necessarily so prominent and not heard. I remember the first time I heard Czech, and I thought, oh, well, it shouldn't be too hard. I was singing in Germany at the time and asked to go and do a program in Czech, in the Czech Republic, a fundraising concert. And I thought, I'll just learn a little Czech to say hello to the audience. Well, again, ignorance is bliss. And when I heard the language, I just thought, oh, my God, how am I ever going to be able to say that? Because it had no relation, Slavic language, no relation to Italian, French, or German, which I was fluent in, but not that one.
So
it's the same experience for them. So we have to keep working on those languages all the time, and a singer does anyway. Even like a person like Judith Force, who is an alum of UBC, right? Alumna of UBC. She, every time she does an opera, she goes over that language with a fine-tooth comb. Now, this is a lady who is a top international singer, but the languages are so important, and the perfection has to be there.
Exactly.
And so area of study.
I can imagine audiences being critical because the singers aren't adept with the particular language, which, of course, affects the performance.
Right.
And it affects the singing.
Right.
So to collapse somewhat your career, we're now at UBC. You've been involved with the Voice and Opera program. But what is it about opera in particular that attracts you? That is to say, is it the music? Is it the drama? Is it the staging?
I think it's that there is everything in the art form, that it does include the acting. Because I always wanted to be an actress. I loved it. And I loved music. And I loved the staging. And I loved the costumes and the gorgeous jewelry and the wigs. And I loved the orchestra. And so opera. And I loved dance. And I loved to dance. And when I was a professional singer, I did a lot of roles in which dance played a big part. And that was fun for me. And I think the attraction for me in opera is that it's a culmination of all the arts, and it's requires a huge amount of multitasking to sing, to act, to cope with props and sets, and watch that man, that conductor that's in the center of everything, who is demanding your attention, but yet you've got to look as though you're not watching him at all. It really is an ultimate art form that includes everything. And I have to say that the passion of opera is that passion that comes from the music and the text together, but also each language. Like, I always look at it as though, yes, I'm singing a language, I'm singing text, but I'm also communicating a language of music, and the orchestra has its language of music, and that's what I'm portraying in my acting. That is as powerful for me as the text is, because the two are married. Of course, the composer is reflecting that text, but then when the composer is doing a section of which we as opera singers, as actors, we have to fill these instrumental sections, which are sometimes very long. We have to fill them with acting. So we're listening to another kind of text, and it's a musical text. And that, for me, is the passion that comes out of that is something that I just love. And I love watching my students do the same thing and find that same kind of thrill of seeing these two kinds of communications coming together and then being the medium from which it comes to the audience, right?
Yes. Well, we certainly hear about operatic triumphs, but sometimes we hear about operatic failures. What was the worst production you've ever seen?
Well, the worst production of something that nobody will ever see anyway again was a contemporary opera called Über die Dächer when I was singing in Nuremberg. And it was a contemporary opera, and it was just awful. It had no reasoning, no thought, no story, and the music was just like wild screaming up and down, and it didn't really matter what note you hit, although he wrote it out, and we were told we had to sing these notes. It was impossible to... I mean, I can learn almost anything, and I was always a fast learner, and I was very precise with the notes. But it was the first time in my life that I thought, oh, my God, this is terrible. Another terrible production, and I think it was of a wonderful opera. It was of Trovatore, but it was a terrible production. I won't name the house in Europe, but it was just made no sense. It was from what I call Euro trash. And nothing against concept productions or modern takes on productions or transferring the time period. That does happen. But it happens sometimes in a way that they can't quite make the story fit their concept. But some directors have such great estimation of themselves that they decide they need to cram that opera into their concept, whether it makes any sense or not. And this was one case. And in The Hero, he ended up in a cold drink cooler spying on his lovers. And so, I mean, it just, that kind of thing just drives me crazy. And it partially drives me crazy because I'm also a stage director and I run a program and I'm very aware of budgets. And I suppose that's some of my Scottish heritage coming through, that I hate to see a lot of money wasted on something that's ridiculous and that the public hate, and that it's going to play what in Germany we always had what we call a subscription series, as we do here. It's going to go through that subscription series, which is about 10 different series, and then that's it. And, you know, they're usually in a European opera house. There'll be a good production, and if it's a really good production, it'll play for 20, 30 years. I mean, they'll do a big playing of it the first year, some more the second year, and then just bring it in. It's a repertoire system where you can see a different opera every night. And that production, if it's good, it'll come back, you know. So you get your money out of it. You're recycling. You know, they were doing that years ago.
Yes, right.
But that aggravates me when I see that.
So let's switch roles. I'm mm-hmm. the singer. You're the composer.
Mm-hmm.
What would you write an opera about today?
What would I write an opera about?
And would it attempt to be classical in some fashion or contemporary?
Well, probably if I wrote an opera today, I'd maybe, what would I want to write the opera about? I maybe want to write an opera about how we are treating our environment and how that has helped, how that is affecting the humans of the world and the animals and living these and living creatures of the world, you know, and what we're doing and why we're doing it, and is it really truthful? Or something about how I always get worried that I think we don't communicate enough with each other, that we don't take time to sit down and talk on the telephone or to sit down and have a conversation over coffee, or families don't have time to get together, and that humans are losing their contact with each other. And that worries me about a bit of humanity. Today in the president's town hall, he was talking about how optimistic and happy he is when he meets a lot of the student leaders. And we have these breakfasts, and myself, I'm the university marshal for UBC, and I go to those breakfasts as well with President Toop. And I agree with him that the hope are in these young people who are such great leaders and have such a social conscience and really are concerned about where we're going with this. I think we've gotten a little bit, I love the technology and what it can do, but I think it can also make us take away our humanity a little bit.
And removes us a bit from that contact.
And then we become less compassionate, and that worries me a bit about that.
Okay, but so for the student who has a minimal amount of exposure to opera, but mm-hmm. they're interested, they'd like mm-hmm. to know what is it all about. They're not in the program. What two or three operas would you recommend they listen to or attend?
Well, La Bohème, because it's about them. I always say I see this opera happening every day at school here, every day at the School of Music. And when we did La Bohème a few years ago, it was quite noticeable that the students came. And it was many people who were seasoned opera goers and had seen Bohème a million times said that they were more moved in that production than they had been at the Met or at Covent Garden, because it was young people playing young people. And it became so real. And when Mimi died, it was very, very devastating. Mm-hmm. The Carmen, we just did Carmen. We're going to be doing the Tales of Hoffmann, which is another great opera, and lots for the eye, lots for the ear. Traviata, La Traviata. It's, again, but these are all stories that there's a human element to it that is real. And it's, I think it's nice for the eye, it's nice for the ear. It's interesting, I was looking at the statistics of our audience, the demographics, and it's interesting to see what the students come to here, the UBC students, and I just noticed that in past year, 2 years ago, we did Rusalka, and there was a huge, huge student population that came to Rusalka, perhaps because we advertised it as the Little Mermaid story, or it just got a lot of, one of our students actually started a video blog at that time, and it might have attracted a lot of the UBC students, which perhaps that was the reason, but it seemed to be, and it seemed to be, they seemed to really love that. Another opera they seemed to really like that we did that a lot of adults may not like so much was Louis Riel, which was written for Canada's centennial, and it's a very contemporary opera, but very dramatic. And, of course, about our historic character, Louis Riel, and UBC students seem to go to that. So opera is like food. There's a lot of different tastes, and you can find a taste for you if you want. I mean, like I said, I thought I hated opera because I only heard it on what was called the Ed Sullivan Show years ago. And it was a Wagnerian soprano, and I have a suspicion it was probably Birgit Nielsen that would come on. Now, today, I would just, she's a goddess for me today. But at that time, my dad and I would turn off the television and wait till it was over. But, and my first opera that I heard was Fledermaus from Johann Strauss, and it was beautiful, and I loved it, and that singing teacher of mine was in it. And then at the faculty, somebody was saying, oh, quick, have a ticket. The Canadian Opera Company is giving away free tickets for the opera. And I said, oh, who's it by? And they said, Strauss. And I said, oh, great, okay, I'll take it. So I went and I sat down there. I didn't look at even I didn't even have time to look at what I was watching, but I just thought, if it's Strauss, it's wonderful. Of course, there's two Strausses, right? And when the curtain opened, it was Elektra. That was quite a shock for me. I thought I'd been sent for. But now, of course, years later, I've sung the Fifth Magd in Elektra, and I've listened to Elektra many times, and I love Elektra, and I love Richard Strauss. But sure, he isn't Johann Strauss.
Yeah, yeah. Things
but
change.
I love him too.
Things
but
change.
Still.
Do you remember a production of Aida in Vancouver at BC Place?
No, I wasn't here at that time, I don't
think. I was in it.
Ah.
I was a supernumerary. I was a black priest.
Wonderful.
Well, sort of wonderful.
No?
We had two performances, and as I'm sure you're aware, black priests didn't wear glasses.
Oh, dear.
So a large group of us were holding on to each other on and off the stage.
Right.
I thought it was wonderful. I had a great time. Great time. Finally, let me ask you, what's your favorite aria?
Oh, dear. I have so many of them.
Well, pick one.
Do I have to just pick one?
Two.
Okay. Well, I think Violetta's aria from La Traviata would be one of them. And I'd have to tie to, I think, Susanna's De Vieni from The Marriage of Figaro. It's in its beautiful simplicity, yet it's a very difficult aria to bring off, but it's so simple and so gorgeous. And then many of the moments of Sophie. She doesn't have an actual aria, but that presentation of the rose with Octavian from Richard Strauss's Der Rosenkavalier. You know, I would think my desert island opera is definitely Tosca, second act of Tosca. And I'm so glad the Vancouver Opera is doing it this year, because I'm going to be there front and center, because And that happened to be also the second act of Tosca was one of the excerpts that we did my first when I went to Banff that year. And that Puccini passion in that Italian Verissimo opera, that's what just, I mean, I cannot explain the world that opened for me there.
It's transcendent, isn't it?
It
was. It's an experience.
And I was a little nothing, and my voice was this little, pure, tiny soprano voice. And I just went to every rehearsal that was done. I never went out with anybody. I just went to the rehearsal and listened. Because it was so earth-shaking, so life-changing. And I think it can be that way for a lot of people.
The audience as well as the performers,
yes,
I believe.
Absolutely.
And that's what we always have to remember is the audience's experience, not
absolutely.
Only the people on stage,
yes,
but everything
yes.
that happens out there. Well, yes. As a member of this audience, it's been spectacular.
Oh.
And I want to thank you so much for coming. Nancy Hermiston, the director of the UBC Voice and Opera Program, she's joined us this evening on UBC Arts on Air. Stay tuned for further programs. Thank you
yes.
again.
Thank you.